This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
From Transport Topics in Washington, D.C., this is Road Signs. And now here's your host, Michael Fries.
Thank you for listening to Road Signs, the podcast series from Transport Topics that explores the trends and technologies that are shaping the future of trucking. Before we dive into today's episode, we'd like to invite you to subscribe to Transport Topics, where you can receive exclusive access of our top 100 lists, quarterly magazines, and other news surrounding the trucking industry. To subscribe, visit ttn.ws/ttsubscribe. You can also text ttsubscribe to 571-622-0001 to become an official member of Transport Topics. That's 571-622-0001. In today's episode, we're going to take a deep dive into electric vehicles, a popular topic in the transportation industry. For quite some time, we've heard a lot about the arrival of EV Class 8 deliveries to several fleets. As the vehicles gain much-needed road experience, the conversation about them has shifted to another area, repair and maintenance. As the EV continues to grow in adoption on the commercial level, many concerns linger on how we maintain them, as well as the future of commercial EV repair. So, for this episode, we'll ask, what's under the hood of the electric vehicle, and what will the maintenance process look like? To answer that question, we have two guests well-versed in that subject. We'll speak to Steve Selinsky from Dana Incorporated later in the program about the e-components of the electric vehicle. But first, let's talk about the state of battery maintenance with Trent Broberg, CEO of the vehicle transport firm Acertus. Welcome to the show, Trent.
Mike, thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you on. You know, you're in the business of moving cars, and definitely you are well aware of the trend of EVs as it's coming on strong, definitely in the passenger market that you've been a big part of. You know, but in this space, the commercial trucking space, you know, there's an anticipation for, you know, the incoming of EVs, and not just for the OEMs that these fleets are ordering from, but also the battery maintenance that's involved. And with batteries, that's sort of the heart and nervous system of the EVs, similar to the internal combustion engine, the ICE of the diesel. And just from in your space, and just, you know, in getting to know that battery maintenance space, especially when it comes to EVs, you know, can you just describe for us just the importance of that?
Yeah, thanks for having me again, Michael. You know, the EVs create a lot of challenges a lot of opportunities and challenges when it comes to not just maintenance, but the infrastructure to support the maintenance, the roadworthiness of the vehicles, the weight of the vehicles. We could go down a lot of different conversations here, but the one thing to keep mind of when you're thinking battery maintenance is much like your iPhone. It's much like any other battery out there. You don't want to charge it to 100% all the time, and you don't want it to go down to zero all the time. So you've got this sweet spot that you'll see 20% to 80% that you want to keep that battery from a maintenance perspective. That creates additional challenges. It does reduce travel transit times and does take some time to get charged. But that's a sweet spot right now from an EV perspective.
You know, from that beginning explanation, just kind of akin to the cell phone that you're just referring to, is it that type of mindset that technicians should have when entering into battery maintenance? Because, you know, there's some people listening right now who are small and mid-sized fleets who are just, you know, curious about this world of EVs that are coming. So when they do have that EV vehicle, you know, of course you're going to have to worry about the maintenance. Is that the type of mind shift that technicians should have, just in the sense of that battery being like a cell phone?
Yeah, it's a completely different propulsion system, right? So when you think about the ICE vehicles that have been around for you know, a century, There's a lot of advantages because of the infrastructure built up around that, the knowledge, the technology, the parts for parts and service. When you think about the distribution of those parts and services, and when things break, you need to fix them quickly. So there's a myriad of supply chain challenges that will also come alongside and ride alongside the EV adoption rate. But yeah, I think, you know, if you're an engineer and you're a shop, you're a fleet, you need to be thinking about, you mentioned the term, they're curious. And I think that's the general gist of the industry, is this general curiosity, because the reality is, you know, you have, you know, less than 1% of commercial trucks out there on the road that are EV. And from a sales perspective and forecasting, will still persist that low level going forward. Obviously, light duty will adopt and has adopted first, and that will push into the class 8.
Yeah, yeah. To that particular point, you know, there's fleets like UPS and other large size fleets who have gone into the EV realm, but in metro cities, you know, on that last mile segment, you know, in Houston and in Atlanta, to name a few cities. You know, so just easing into that process. So I you know, the smaller fleets and those mid fleets, is that the EV space? I mean, that would be something that would be at least economically viable, wouldn't it be, for them to enter in?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few different things to think about when you're a fleet owner. It's obviously length of haul, that's your biggest challenge. The time to charge, your infrastructure associated to that. So the way that we support a lot of these light duty vehicles throughout our facilities are those final mile type delivery components. They're the bread boxes of the light duty vehicles, less so on the class 8s right now. There's a few big commercial fleets that are, I live in Phoenix, Arizona, and it seems to be a hotbed for trials and testing because it's flat when you're driving between here and LA. And there are some, you know, AB InBev and Pepsi and many others that are testing in a short range capacity. But the biggest challenge is you got to charge them. So you can't run these. You can't do a drop and hook scenario. So you've got to you've got to charge these because they can't run, you know, over, you know, as much as obviously a nice vehicle can.
Yes, I mean, that's sort of the disadvantage in that regard. But however, you know, let's get into the nitty gritty of it, just in battery performance and having that EV. Let's say I'm a small fleet, midsize owner. I got an army of EVs ready to go. And, you know, I've been rolling them at you know, for a while now. And it's time to do some maintenance. You know, what are some of the initial things that a fleet owner needs to be aware of when he has or she has that those fleets of EVs for a few months now? What were those considerations?
Well, generally speaking, you know, an EV is less maintenance because it doesn't have as many moving parts. So that's a positive. When you think about, you know, right now it's really going through this innovation cycle. So there's a lot of brake fixes in a lot of EVs out there that are just trial and error. Right, you're building the plane while you're flying it, so to speak. So the adaptability and once again, it's the service infrastructure that's challenged here. It's you've got to send typically technicians out versus having a third party come to the truck on the roadside to fix something. So you've got to get a network here that can support these. You've got to get physical infrastructure. You might have a couple different DCs, hubs, fleet shops, but you've got to get partnerships probably outside of that can service you if you're functioning as a hub and spoke model. So really it's a little more broad based, and you've got to send the technicians in many times. It depends on the situation here, because keeping in mind the majority of the challenges that are on the road when you think about brake fixes are trailer doors and lights and tires and brakes, and those are all the same, right? So you really service them the same way you otherwise would. So hopefully in the long run, this will actually reduce service costs and increase the depreciation or longevity of these vehicles on the road.
You had mentioned the challenges to that, you know, the supply chain of the infrastructure, of building the infrastructure. And that's just one of the main concerns of EVs all together. What are some of those particular pain points that are such a struggle?
Well, the first and foremost is simply just the charging infrastructure needed here. If you're talking about a vehicle, some of these new Class 8 trucks have batteries that weigh as much as, 10 Model S Plaid batteries. So you're talking a huge capacity for charging need from a kilowatt hour perspective, and that's your biggest challenge. So once again, it's being able to charge them quickly, charge them from an infrastructure that makes sense for you because they're obviously down and they're not moving when they're charging. What's interesting to me is, a lot of these OEMs, and there's plenty of OEMs, whether it's PACCAR and many others that are coming out right now with, I think PACCAR's got 7 different EVs on the road. So there's a lot of testing. The infrastructure will follow with the infrastructure bills passed by the administration, but it's going to take some time. The adoption and the demand for EVs will outpace the infrastructure for years.
Hello, Roadside listeners. Dan Ronan here from Transport Topics. I'm here to tell you about our new extended cuts of the Road Signs podcast. If you like what you learn here, I think you're going to really love this. So what is the Road Signs extended cut? Well, instead of ending the recording and saying our guest farewells, we're keeping our expert guests around for an extra 1 or 2 questions to gather a deeper, fuller picture of the influential topics in transportation. We capture that insight and convert it into a printable download that will help you navigate the latest trucking trends and guide your next business decision. Considering the easy, linkable, and printable format, you can keep the extended cut for your next big meeting, send it to your friends and colleagues, or pack it up for your next big conference. So how do you get the latest download? Well, it's real simple. Visit ttn.ws/extended cut. That's ttn.ws/extended cut.
So, that sounds like a situation of the chicken and egg or horse and cart, however you want to put that. Yeah. Because, as you probably well aware, states, such as California, I think New York, I believe, by 2035, want to have all vehicles that are sold, at least in the passenger realm, electric by that particular time. Now, and as you were just mentioning with the infrastructure and there's just the race to build that particular network, what will kind of come first? Will that network be there by 2035?
Your guess is as good as mine. You could probably ask anybody on the street, and it's a little bit cloudy on that environment, but I think it's going to be challenged. It's going to be challenged for many years to come, because as these vehicles start rolling, even on the passenger side EVs, if you look at California, 40% of all EVs sold in 2022 were in California. So the obvious adoption rates are through the roof there. Obviously, the charging infrastructure will continue to grow in demand. But from a commercial perspective, the need to charge these vehicles is, like I said, 10x what it would be a passenger vehicle. And you can't run at night. So if you're charging these, depending on how fast you can charge these vehicles, it's going to be a big challenge. And you might need to increase the size of your fleet to manage that charging time where you otherwise could just fuel up at any gas station across America or any diesel and keep moving.
That's a very good point. There was just a report in Bloomberg about just on the passenger realm with some are figuring New York to be a desert when it comes to EV charging infrastructure, but we're here to talk about commercial vehicles, and as you said, that demand is going to be 10 times. So for that small fleet, mid-sized fleet owner who has those electric vehicles and is under that pressure of that 10 times of needed service, what are some of the things they can do to boost production for that battery? In case of there's not a place to recharge.
It's working with the shippers, right? So you're the, from an asset perspective, it's creating the right legs and the right network optimization in the shippers, because I believe that a lot of these shippers will adopt infrastructure, and it's already happening today for charging capabilities, and it's working with that shipper to be able to charge. Think about the detention time in a parking facility or the unload and load times. Those can all be opportunities for charging in theory. Right. In a, not necessarily a drop and hook scenario, but, those types of things, there is a lot of latent time. I think the average truck is still using 7.5 hours per logbook per day, which is the same, you know, maybe seven, maybe a little bit increase as it was, you know, 20 years ago when I started in logistics. So there's a lot of downtime at shippers because of, you know, the industrial component of that, loading and unloading. So how can we utilize that for EVs? And, you know, small and mid fleets are really just trying to understand likely what their network can support, because these trucks out there, they still have a usable distance of less than 500, and that's a max capacity. So you really want it much less than that.
Well, what's some of the feedback that you've heard from, you know, the clients you work with, you know, concerning EVs, who have exposure with EVs in that commercial space? I mean, what are some of the experiences that they're telling you?
Well, it's great. The drivers love them. The drivers, you know, it's got a lot of torque. So when you're talking about, you know, grades, steep grades and things like that, they're great vehicles. They're also all new vehicles. So you get the advantage of all the other technology associated to that, whether it's safe driving technology and otherwise. So the drivers love it. The drivers are a precious resource, obviously, out there. It's a challenged environment to support drivers. So I think that will obviously drive some of the adoption of these fleets, because it seems to be the drivers that I've talked to that drive EV trucks, whether they be light or heavy duty, just love them. I think that's the first and foremost, and I think that will drive adoption. But, you know, in theory, diesel prices are not cheap right now. So having to pay for electricity is a little bit cheaper, especially from a commercial perspective. So there's some financial benefits there.
Yeah, definitely. But speaking of just about the energy, for anyone who's wanting to get into the recharging infrastructure side, the recharging side of that infrastructure, there definitely has to be. You were talking about, you know, working with shippers, but I would definitely think that those who want to be in that charging space will have to speak with their energy providers as well, and that's another whole bag of worms for fleets. And others, and other shareholders to undertake. So, I mean, and with that, I mean, that conversation is pretty important too, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's a lot of federal grants out there with the new infrastructure bill. We're upfitting a lot of our facilities. You know, we've got somewhere around 57 facilities across the U.S. that we're upfitting for EV charging capabilities. And be thinking about, you know, how. There are a lot of companies out there that are upfitting or retrofitting local infrastructure or increasing that. You got to understand what the site can support. So as you look at new facilities, it should be a checkbox to understand, what the capacity is in that facility. But work with your local jurisdiction, your local municipalities, because there's a lot of state and federal tax credits out there that can really support this growth and adoption at the onset of this curve.
Well, you know, Trent, you know, one last question before we get you out of here. And, you know, first of all, thank you for coming on to our, you know, event series and Road Signs podcast. The analogy that you used earlier in our conversation about the cell phone, that's a very interesting one. In the sense that, you know, with ICE vehicles, when it's time to get gas, you go to a gas station, you get gas. Now, and with an electric vehicle, it's simple, but it's not that simple in the parallels that I just described earlier. You know, and for those in that recharging space or wanting to get in that recharging space, like, you know, the truck stops, you had mentioned the warehouses and even the fleets that want to power their own EVs. I'm going to ask you to put your analyst hat on, Trent, and just make a sort of a bold prediction. Where do you see that in the next 5 to 10 years? Who's going to have that particular market space when it comes to the recharging? So my question, you know, when a truck driver in the year 2035 is going down the road, where is he or she going to get that charge from?
Great question. So obviously in your home base. So that's first and foremost. Whether you're having you have a slip seat operation or simply a dedicated situation. So obviously at the home base, the shipper, and then when you think about that middle mile, the more near term or long term, truck stops, because that's going to be where all the other facilities are that you're already used to. So as you think about this adoption curve, the number of pumps at truck stop have to convert to the number of EV charging at the same rate, depending on the lane that EVs will. EVs don't act as well in really cold climates, for example, because the battery can't hold a charge as long, or you can't charge it as much. So as you think about, I mentioned that Phoenix to LA route, you're going to see infrastructure pop up there a lot sooner than it would up in Minnesota, for example, just because there's going to be more demand for it. So demand will drive the investments from a lot of these truck stops, and then obviously the infrastructure at home base.
Well, it's definitely going to be a long game. It's going to be very entertaining from where we sit to look at it. We've been speaking with Trent Broberg, CEO of Assertus. Trent, it's been a pleasure having you on to the event series and the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Are you using Apple Podcasts to listen to Road Signs? Here's how you can get the most out of your experience. First, subscribe to Road Signs podcast channel and make sure the Apple Podcast app is downloaded on your mobile device. Second, pick the episode you'd like to listen to. Third, to find more out about the episode, scroll down on the player page to see the guest details, the mission of the episode, and links to more audio offerings. You're sure to enjoy it. If you're still having difficulties tuning in, email us at share@ttnews.com for more help. Happy listening.
Welcome back to a very special episode of Road Signs. As part of our Transport Topic magazine event series, Recharge, we're here to talk about EV recharging infrastructure, of course. We have covered that in many facets. We have spoken to fleets. We have spoken to vehicle manufacturers. And now, we'll get the OEM perspective. And for that, we have a 40-year veteran here with us. His name is Steve Selinsky. He's the Director of Global Product Planning for Commercial Vehicles for Dana Incorporated. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate being here with you.
Glad to have you on. You know, as I had mentioned, you know, this is a program where the people listening, they're fleet managers, fleet owners, they are contemplating an electric fleet some way, somehow. So In order to do that, you know, there's a lot of questions that are probably going through their heads. And one of those is just the difference between, you know, electric parts and the internal combustion engine parts, the ICE components. And, you know, there's a lot of things when you talk about, you know, diesel components versus the electric components. Just, you know, it's quieter. There's less need for lubricants, maybe less maintenance. But, you know, as a person who has been in this space for quite some time and helped ushered that particular moment of EVs in. What's the particular difference in those components, the electric versus the ICE?
Yeah, great question, Mike. It's exciting to be here too, because this is the most exciting time, I think, in our industry with the changes we're seeing now going to battery electric vehicles. But if you think about the propulsion system in an electric vehicle, there's usually a central drive motor used with a conventional drive line or drive axle. There could also be a central motor with a geared transmission connected to it, again, with conventional drive lines or axles. And then there's also the opportunity to use an e-axle that could be a single speed or multi-speeds. So that really is the primary propulsion system. But the big changes on the vehicle also include all the power electronics, whether you're talking about inverters for motor controllers, charge control units, vehicle control units, transmission control units, as well as the high voltage junction boxes. You have to do the cabin air and heat and cooling capacity, as well as operating air compressors for braking systems and the electric hydraulic power steering systems. On top of all this is now software. So these electric vehicles are really considered like a rolling computer, if you will. The biggest and most expensive part of these electric vehicles tend to be the battery packs. So there's usually more than one battery pack per vehicle, especially with commercial vehicle. And then the battery management system that goes along with that, and the big orange high voltage cables that you see connecting all this together. As you mentioned, Mike, with the diesel, you're eliminating the engine, the oil, the filters, after treatment systems, fuel systems, all that goes away. And at the end of the day, you're taking all the bolt-on components that typically are off the fan belt and running those as individual discrete systems now on a battery electric vehicle. As you mentioned, the TCO benefit for electric vehicles includes benefit to the driver. As you mentioned, it runs quieter. It's much easier to drive. It has better acceleration. But at the end of the day, the electric propulsion system is really more efficient than a diesel engine. The diesel engine wastes a lot of energy through heat and noise. And overall, the electric powertrain is likely 3.5 times more efficient than diesel on on-highway mode, and even up to 5 or 7 times more energy efficient in stop-and-go traffic. But overall, there's roughly 30-40% less components now on electric powertrain system versus a diesel, and then that also adds to the maintenance benefit and maintenance savings.
You know, that about the components, you know, the less need, well, the percentage less of components that are needed. One of those things, I kind of want to talk about the production process of that. You know, as I had mentioned before, I would say you were there from the beginning in the sense of, you know, the partnerships that you had that we'll talk about later, and also just the plans that Dana had had implemented into, you know, getting to this particular stage right now. And because of that, could you just talk about the scaling process of production and how, you know, basically the challenges of, you know, meeting that increasing need for components?
Well, currently the ramp up rate is fairly slow. So that allows us to enter into this business gradually. We're actually leveraging over 118 years of experience in developing these systems and then integrating these new systems into our manufacturing operations. So you can imagine we have a lot of manufacturing controls and processes in place already for run at rate, for quality systems, for processes and controls. The other big benefit that we see to support electrification properly is we're vertically integrated on most of the components, whether it's motors, inverters, axles, gears, cooling systems, high power voltage systems, building electronic cradles. We do all that in-house. So we can control the quality and the performance of those systems as we deliver to our OEM customers. The other big issue with ramping up production tends to be battery supply. So as many companies are now ramping up battery supply more globally, bringing that capacity online is certainly going to help availability as well as control the costs of the battery systems.
The point that you made earlier just about that process of production, and one of the things about that process, and most manufacturers are probably going through it right now as well, is the supply chain challenges that most manufacturers are having to deal with, especially with availability of materials and components. You know, I just wanted to ask, what is your approach to ensuring that consistency to the quality of parts that you had just mentioned?
Well, we've got some pretty good processes in place to manage our supply base. We're also able to leverage many different markets. So we're in the commercial vehicle market, but Dana's also in the light vehicle market as well as off-highway markets. So we're able to leverage that supply base as well as our own internal manufacturing across the globe. So that certainly helps us in terms of being able to deliver products to our customers on time.
Where are some of the internal challenges that you face in that particular process?
I would say the biggest internal challenges is we're adding a lot of new equipment and tooling in place to support the new business. We're mostly putting them in existing facilities. So we have the processes and people already in place, but we're leveraging that with this new equipment and new process to support electrified systems.
You know, with that, you know, being, you know, internally sustainable, I guess, as you were just explaining, just having everything in the house, that's one positive. Another positive is the external part of things, you know, just the collaboration and partnerships that you had. You know, back in 2019, you had a partnership with Hyliion, and you know, that you know, matured into, you know, a very successful venture, you know, come, you know, this particular year from 2019. And what about the other, you know, partnerships that you have, especially in terms of repair and maintenance? How are you cultivating those?
Well, it's a good question. You know, we work closely primarily with our OEM customers as well as our fleet customers. So we were able to also leverage our internal processes that we already had, being in the driveline business for so long, where when it comes to supporting our external customers and partnering with them, they can use existing systems that we already have in place, such as a one-stop shop, one phone call, you know, basically does it all, whether you're talking about conventional or traditional products or our electrified products. We've also invested heavily to put a sustainable mobility center in place near our corporate headquarters, where we actually bring our partners in, our fleet customers, our OEM customers, suppliers come in, and we go through vehicles, we can tear them down, we can put on training and show people how to operate these vehicles, how to maintain these vehicles, and how to help them build the tools they need to support these in the field.
let me touch upon that, you know, the education part. You know, how is that relationship with, I'm assuming with the fleets and dealerships that you're dealing with the education of, you know, maintaining these parts and also, you know, the repair of it as well. You know, how is that particular relationship and how is that learning curve for those fleets and dealerships?
Well, I think, again, it's in the ramp up phase. So we have a good relationship with them and we actually visit dealers, visit fleets to provide services and training as needed on site. Like I said, another benefit is to bring them in our facility because they may not have seen many electric vehicles yet since it's really just starting in our industry. Largely speaking, North America, or really the rest of the world, is probably 10 years behind China in implementing electric commercial vehicles. So we're really lagging behind China in general as the rest of the world. And that's going to continue to grow, and it's going to grow with more quality systems and systems that are reliable and actually work.
You know, that's one thing I do want to touch upon, Steve. But before I let you go, I just kind of want to ask you one particular last question on that particular subject, just kind of that particular race that you were talking about with China and just the race for EV recharging infrastructure. I want to ask you to put your analyst hat on for this particular industry question. You know, where do you see the infrastructure of EVs, just when it comes to the production and the recharging of these vehicles when this ultimately becomes critical mass? Where do you see that playing? How do you see that playing out in the next 5-10 years?
Really, we're concerned about the infrastructure really lagging the need in terms of receiving electric vehicles. Electric vehicles are already available, and our fleet customers are concerned about how are they going to charge all these vehicles. So they may have to think about where else they may have to move their facilities to get access to charge stations. There's going to be an evolution of how to charge vehicles, whether it's wireless charging through the road, through a mat. Applications such as yard spotters or drayage vehicles can charge on site, which makes it very convenient so they can get more use out of these vehicles. So that's evolving as well. But we do need more work on infrastructure, whether there's going to be stationary power where you can actually have battery storage on site so you can charge these batteries up in off hours. So that's going to evolve over time as well. But right now, I would say that the infrastructure is probably the pacing item that we hear from our fleet customers of how we're going to be ready to support the move towards green technology fast enough.
That's what makes the future so wonderful and so exciting to anticipate. We are speaking with Steve Selinsky, Director of Global Product Planning, Commercial Vehicles for Dana Incorporated. Steve, it was a pleasure having you on, and thanks for teaching us the world of OEMs.
Thank you, Mike. It was a pleasure to be with you today, and looking forward to seeing you soon.
Likewise.
Did you know you can ask Alexa to open Transport Topics? In just 1 minute, you will hear the biggest trucking headlines of that day. Be prepared and start your morning off right with Transport Topics.
Before we close, let's take a moment to revisit our original question. What's under the hood of the electric vehicle, and what will the maintenance process look like? First, we would like to thank Trent Broberg and Steve Selinsky for joining us on the podcast. The subject of EVs might have been mentioned a few times here on the podcast during the several years or so, but it's also one of the few industry issues that has reached critical mass. From the CEO of a fleet to the server at your favorite restaurant, every person has an opinion on the electric vehicle. The current challenge of EV repair and maintenance is that the very thought of it was non-existent for most people just several years ago. As Trent Broberg alluded, although the EV market is rising, there is still a small percentage of vehicles that are out on the road today. And that is the reason why, as Steve Selinsky noted, that now is the time to think of EV repair and maintenance, especially at a large scale. That will take tech education and a robust relationship between dealers, OEMs, fleets, as well as local, state, and federal governments. While the future looks bright for EV infrastructure, the industry is taking steps to make sure that the future eventually becomes the now. To learn more about electric vehicle infrastructure, please visit ttnews.com and view the recap of our Transport Topics magazine event series, Recharge. If you enjoyed this episode of Road Signs, please let others know. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to reach out to the Road Signs team on Twitter at @ttroadsigns or reach me at @michaelvfreeze. you can email us at share@ttnews.com. We'll read them and respond daily. Also, let us know how we're doing by texting TT Survey to 571-622-0001. And of course, we'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode of Road Signs. Until then, I'm Michael Fries. Thank you for listening.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.